Greetings. These are the chronicles of one man's adventures and misadventures in Asia. I am Kokujin. In episode 2, we detour to a virtual visit of Morocco with Brother Mao Zong. Thank you for downloading. Welcome to my first-time listeners. Welcome back to returning listeners. Since the first episode went live, I have been working diligently to upgrade the presentation. And in furtherance of that effort, I have established a number of ways to communicate back with me. If you have suggestions or comments, or you just want to give general feedback, there's an entire directory of Kokujin Chronicle connections at the blog site at kokujinchronicles.wordpress.com, which is also where I will be posting the show notes for each episode. So please head over there first and take a look, and if you're so inclined, let me know what you think. In other news, I have not heard anything back from any of the jobs I applied to in Japan, not surprisingly. So I have, of course, expanded my search to opportunities in other countries. I have a number of applications that I've submitted to schools in China and schools in Korea. And I believe that I may have seen one or two that I post bookmarked for Malaysia, which I will follow up on later today when I get over to the library for the high-speed internet access. For this episode, I decided to do something a little bit different. My good friend, Brother Mao Zong, and I have been friends for over 20 years. And generally speaking, about once a year, Brother Mao Zong drops out of sight because he's out traveling the world someplace. And he's usually gone for a week or so and comes back, and then we get in touch, and, you know, generally speaking, we do a fairly decent job of maintaining contact with each other. But last year, Brother Mao Zong was out of touch and off the grid for a long time, and when he came back, he shared with me that he had been on a long and extended tour, which took him through Spain and through Morocco. And so Brother Mao Zong graciously consented to come on the show and share some of his experiences and impressions of Morocco today. And so I present herewith Brother Mao Zong Does Morocco. In the studio today, as I promised, a special guest, a special treat for me, my good friend, who we're going to call Brother Mao Zong. You may wonder why. If you ever met this gentleman, you would know why instantly. So, Brother Mao Zong, welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
So, I understand you've been traveling the world a bit.
I try to get around a little bit. I believe travel opens your mind up.
Mm-hmm.
Eliminates a lot of prejudice and racism and things of that sort. So the more I can travel, the more well-rounded a person I become.
Okay. Why don't you list the places you've managed to visit so far?
My latest visits has been to Morocco, to Spain, to the islands, Dominica, St. Croix, St. Thomas, Mexico, Canada. Those are a few of the places I have been to.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was particularly intrigued when you told me, after a long absence, that you had been over in Morocco. And I asked you in today because I'd like to hear your perspective on Morocco. Of course, my listeners, all two of them, know that I'm mainly concerned with Asia. But I figured Morocco was, you know, close enough, we can talk about that too.
Definitely. I really enjoyed Morocco because I understand the rich history of the Moors over in Morocco.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that the Moors had ruled for 700 years. When the Europeans were in the Dark Ages, the Moors were thriving. Mm-hmm. They had libraries, they had tubs, they had the written language. They were dialoguing about life, about astronomy, about biology, about physics. They were trying to figure out how to have stronger and more productive communities. They had different groups of people. They had Muslims, they had Christians, they had Jews, and people were all getting along together in harmony. And because a lot of times I hear that Muslim people are fanatical or that they can't get along with Christians or Jews. But if we look back to 711, 800s, 900s, these people, these Moors, these Moroccan people were thriving. They were respecting other people's religion, other people's ethnicity, other people's culture. And they said, hey, let's build a positive and productive and respectful community. And I thought that was really, really significant. And that's why I want to go and see the people myself firsthand.
Okay. So what was the experience like?
It was wonderful. The people were really warm. They were, one of the most important things that stood out is that family and the community was all there. They really enjoyed their family. They really enjoyed their community. Morocco is a Muslim country.
Mm-hmm.
So they would say prayers 5 times a day, and just seeing the people hear the Adhan, that was the Adhan is the call to prayer, and then just getting up, going to the prayer. But then also in the evening, after the evening prayer called Maghrib,
mm-hmm.
the whole community would come out. And when I first saw that, I said, what's going on? I thought it was a huge soccer match or football game or basketball game. So the first night, they came out and they greeted each other, and people were having tea and just laughing and talking. And then the second night, it happened again. The third night, fourth night, I'm like, does this happen every night? And they said, yes, this is how we come together and enjoy each other. We may not have all the riches of the world
mm-hmm.
that America has. We may not all have cars and the houses and the clothes, but we have family. We have togetherness. We have communication. And we come out every night and we sell our goods. We just have tea. We talk about our children, what they're doing,
mm-hmm.
how to make things better in the world. And so that was just really, really inspiring to see that.
I always wanted to ask you, when you were over there, did the Moroccans see you and how should I say this? Did they view you and treat you as they would a foreigner or an American or something else? How were you received?
I think I was received in 2 ways. They received me as their brother.
Mm-hmm.
They received me as an American, because they saw the way I spoke and things of that sort.
So they picked up on that right away.
They picked up on that right away.
And were you dressed as an American, or did you? Because I know you. I know you try to fit in.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, they more or less they recognized me as an American because of the way I was speaking.
Okay.
But besides that, the way I look.
Always look more or less Moroccan to me.
I'm more or less blended in with the people in Morocco.
Okay, so until you spoke, you were good.
Until I spoke, I was good. Then one of the guys, I could have easily been his son. So I definitely blended in. People were real warm. We really got along.
Okay. Tell me, some of the sites you saw there.
Well, you know, you read things about here in America,
mm-hmm.
and from my understanding, America's about 500, 600 years old.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
depends who you ask, doesn't it?
Give or take. But when I was over in Morocco, I went to different marketplaces.
Mm-hmm.
One place in particular was called Fez, and this place is almost over 2,000 to 3,000 years old, and it's still in the same way it was in those years.
Mm-hmm.
In Morocco, they have a lot of small alleyways where it was, they built this 2,000 to 3,000 years ago, so it's still there. Therefore, cars can't even go through certain places. Therefore, they would have to use donkeys in order to get the merchandise into to the different shops. So you're walking down buying some beads or buying some sandals or buying a t-shirt, and here comes a donkey with a whole load of clothes on it or food on top of it. And they're telling you, look out, here comes this donkey. You know, if you don't look out, the donkey will knock you over.
So
you're jumping back, waiting for the donkey to go by.
Mm-hmm.
And Yeah, just amazing. That, so, I mean, something that's 3,000 years old and they're still existing and still practicing the things they did way back then.
Mm.
And it's like, you know, this is 2011, and I don't really see them trying to make any significant changes. They might try to put some paint on it or fix some holes here and there, but besides that, they're not really saying, we want to tear this down and build some big, magnificent skyscraper or whatever else. They said, no, this is our culture. This is how we've been living. And they just appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm going to go through all five senses. Sure, so that was sight. What was the sound like? If you can recreate that.
It was a peaceful sound. It was a just peaceful. I mean, every day, in the first thing in the morning, you're hearing the call to prayer,
and that's throughout the city, is it?
That's
my understanding.
That's throughout the city.
Okay.
So people are stopping five times a day, and they hear the call to prayer, and they're running to the mosque. There's a mosque in almost every other corner.
Mm-hmm.
So there might just be a store who has a little mosque in the back, or there might be a big mosque, depending on what part of the city that you're in.
Okay.
And they run, they go make prayer, and they come back, and they go back to their regular business.
So everything stops for however long a period that takes, and then they go
ten
back.
Minutes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So each individual, because usually the prayer may be within an hour and a half period.
Mm-hmm.
So depending on what they're doing, if they're with the customer, you know, finish up with their customer, they're being polite and respectful. Then after they finish, they run off for 5-10 minutes, go make their prayer, and they come back and continue conducting their business.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
And but that's those sounds and sounds of the animals. You hear the roosters in the morning.
Okay, so I understand that even though Morocco is an ancient city, it's not old. My understanding, my impression was that it's fairly modern.
It's, you say modern in what capacity? I'm not sure you say modern.
Well, I don't know that there's a Starbucks in every corner, but I mean, you know, they've got television, they've got libraries, they've got modern, I guess it really does come down to Western influence type things, doesn't it? They have Western type stores over there? They got McDonald's and Burger King and a Starbucks coffee or something like that?
You know, I really didn't see a whole lot of that.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I really didn't see McDonald's and Burger King or Starbucks. I mean, they have a lot of tea shops. One of the biggest things is the Moroccan tea.
Yeah, they've been serving that for thousands of years, too.
Thousands of years, but yeah, I really didn't see a whole lot of that in Morocco.
Okay.
And even though Morocco and the United States has one of the longest standing treaties, and they have one of the best relationships, even after 9/11, Morocco has went out of its way to make sure it keeps a good standing with the United States. And a lot of people in Morocco, you know, they look at America a little ambivalent, partially good, partially bad.
Okay.
All right. Yes.
So, tell me about the Moroccan tea experience, because I understand that that's not only common, but there's actually a tradition to it.
That was great. I think I had tea every night, maybe a couple times a day, maybe in the morning, probably in the afternoon, usually in the evening.
Mm-hmm.
And they have like sweet. They use a lot of sugar in their tea.
So, what's it like for those of us who haven't been there?
It's an experience that I think each individual needs to go and see with their own eyes. Because I mean, a lot of times you can hear somebody talk about it, you can read it in books, you can see the pictures, but there's nothing like walking on the Moroccan soil, talking to the people, interacting with them, with the men, sometimes the women. Some women are dressed in Islamic garb, so you can't really talk to them too much. But there's other women, because of the relationship with America and Morocco and Western standards, there's some women who are not in Islamic garb, and they're just like an American woman almost, and you sit down and have a cup of tea with them too. You don't see very many of them. And most of the ones you do see are probably 30 and under, 30 to, you know, 30 and under. But most of the women over 30 appear to be wearing the Islamic garb, so couldn't have too many conversations with the woman. But the men were just warm. You know, they wanted to hear about how things were in America, how I was treated, talk about prejudice, talk about racism, discrimination. They were concerned about those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
especially being a black man, you know, they hear stories about how black people are treated. Also, they hear that sometimes that black people don't give all their energy and effort to do positive things. So they said they had mixed messages.
Okay. And where were they getting their information from? I mean, what kind of cultural exposure did they have?
I'm not sure exactly. I would say probably just from the media. The media, different people who have traveled to America. Probably from immigration. When they go through the immigration, they probably inform them about different things, how people behave or what the expectations of certain races of people.
You're listening to a Kokujin Chronicles podcast. You can read show notes or leave comments at kokujinchronicles.wordpress.com.
What kind of people did you encounter in Morocco? I mean, were they all Moroccan, or is it a fairly mixed and cosmopolitan type city? Or
I was in Casablanca, Morocco.
Okay.
Fez Morocco, and basically everybody looked Moroccan. And I didn't see too many really other ethnic groups in Morocco. Most of the people were of a lighter hue.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked them where the darker skinned Moroccans were, and they said they were more or less in South Sahara, in the Sahara Desert.
Okay.
And they showed it was interesting seeing that distinction, because Morocco is in North Africa. But they didn't really consider themselves as African. They considered themselves more as Arab instead of African. When we talk about the Moors were considered more African.
Mm-hmm.
Where now over the years, you know, the Arab influence has dominated Morocco. So even though it's in Africa, they see themselves more like, as Arabs.
Okay. Yeah.
Except for, like I said, they say you want to see black Moroccans or black Arabs. They still call them Arabs, even though they're darker skin, they said they would go south.
Okay.
And they would call those people the blue people. They said, you want to go see the blue people? Which is interesting. I want to see some of those blue people, but I didn't get a chance to go because that was like a day's trip.
Hmm.
But they said they live out there. They call them the blue people and the darker skin people.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess they wear blue turbans and blue robes. And
so a different tribe in essence.
A different tribe in essence.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Hmm. Well, you know, you brought it up and then you got off the topic real quick. So, and I know that the two listeners I have are going to want to know. Tell us about the women that you saw.
The woman that I could see, they were beautiful. The women were beautiful. They were good listeners. They appeared to.
So you had the opportunity to speak with a few.
Most of the women I spoke to were in the hotel.
Okay.
So I couldn't really speak to a woman at the coffee shop or walking down the street. But the women who were in the hotel, because they were customer service,
right,
I could talk with them.
Okay.
You know, things of that sort. But yeah, they appeared to be really friendly, thoughtful. They appeared to be patient.
Mm-hmm.
They appeared to like Americans.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Always a good thing to know.
Yeah, good luck in
America, so. I might have to bump Morocco up on my list of places to visit.
All right.
What stands out in your mind about your visit there?
Just being there, talking to people, drinking the green tea, going to the marketplaces and seeing monuments and seeing mosques where it's been so it's like ancient.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing places 2,000 or 3,000 years old. Going to the mosque, making prayer, seeing other people, making prayer, talking a little bit. The whole community, I think, after the evening prayer, everybody would come out and socialize.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, from the baby, from 2-year-olds to the 100-year-olds. And it wasn't no distinction of, no, you're too young, you're too old, or you're a certain race or religious group. So everybody came together and talked and hung out.
Mm.
And it's amazing too, because of all the controversy that's going on in the Middle East at this time, one of the main places that people would hang out was at the palace where the king was. there's a big courtyard, and that's like where the marketplace place was, or mm-hmm. the meeting ground mm-hmm. after prayer. I mean, you would see like easily 4,000 or 5,000 people. And then they would bring out their rug, they'd bring out their tea, they'd bring out the things that they were selling. And some people just weren't selling, they just hang out and, you know, talking and laughing, playing games. But everything kind of surrounded right there where the palace is.
Okay.
In the courtyard.
Right.
And my whole thing, I'm really a strong advocate of family.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really saw that. I saw family, even though they didn't have the riches, they had the family love and togetherness
mm-hmm.
on a daily basis. Because one thing I'm always trying to emphasize is that men need to be involved with their families. And we've seen tons of men. Men are interacting with their children. Mothers interacting, but also just the prejudicial views that men and women don't interact in Morocco. Men and women are walking, holding hands together. You know, if they're husband and wife, or maybe brother and sister.
Mm-hmm.
But you see, you know, men talking, laughing, holding hands. A lot of times, I always have the image, okay, that you hear that the man has to be 4 steps ahead, or
four steps
back. But when they're coming in the evening, they're hanging out. I mean, it has to be a family member, but they're still doing it. They're hanging out with their husband. You don't see them affectionately kissing each other, something like that.
Right.
But they're walking, they're laughing, holding hands. So those kind of things were nice to see.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the most important thing I saw, because I'm such a strong advocate of family, and seeing that family community every day. I thought it was a huge football game every night. I'm like, what is going on? So
they just living the life.
They were living the life.
Mm.
Making the best of.
Okay. Did you encounter any other Americans or any expatriates over there?
Well, I was with Americans when I went over there.
I'm talking about Americans or other people who actually have made the move and live there now.
I have. I did not meet anybody else who was actually living over there.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was just wondering if it's possible to, you know, uproot and go over there. How would I live? How would I support myself?
I didn't meet anybody personally, but one of the guys, one of our tour guides,
mm-hmm.
said, oh, yeah, you look like my son. Come over here. I'll let you marry a couple of my daughters, something like that.
Was he joking or was he serious?
I think he was serious.
Mm. See, you could have come back with more than the usual, you know, postcards.
That's for sure. but he talked about a couple of different Americans, matter of fact, from New York, a couple of brothers from New York.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah, they came over here and they have two wives, and, you know, they're enjoying life and making the best of it. They stay here about 6 months. They go back to New York for 6 months.
Okay.
But I didn't meet them, but he would tell me about some of them that he knows, some Americans.
Right, right. Did you meet the daughters, by the way?
No, I didn't get a chance to. But he told me to correspond.
He said stay in touch?
Stay in touch.
Okay. So you may have to make a follow-up visit or something.
Right, that's for sure. I'm definitely going back. I really enjoyed Morocco. I want to spend more time, because when I went there, I was on a tour,
mm-hmm.
and everything was rush.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to go and stay in one city for at least maybe a week, 2 weeks, maybe even a month, so I can really feel the people, feel the pulse of the people.
Okay.
Because things are just moving too fast.
Right, you have to get off the tour bus and go do your thing.
Right.
You get to go on the side streets.
2 or 3 hours, go here,
right,
go
right.
here. And so I want to be able to go and just have a cup of tea and listen to the music and laugh a little bit,
mm-hmm.
you know, without having to rush.
Okay. So what advice do you have for any young gentlemen contemplating a visit to Morocco? We got any words of wisdom other than get away from the tour bus?
Right. Well, once again, travel is one of the most important things that broadens your mind and your horizon. And I think a lot of us have prejudices and stereotypes and racism and all these isms that are inside of our mind because of our upbringing.
Mm-hmm.
And just to talk to people one-on-one and figure out who they are, what is their character, what is their disposition, what is their purpose, and how can they move forward? Because it makes you a richer person, makes you a more well-rounded person. Because as we recognize, the world is getting smaller and smaller each and every day.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't be afraid of going down the block. We can't be afraid of going across the water. At one time, it took us months and months to go to Africa or to Japan, or even from Seattle to down south,
mm-hmm.
take a few months. You know, where people are people I'm recognizing have some of the basic necessities. You know, people want, you know, food, water, shelter, but after that, they want companionship.
Mm-hmm.
They want respect. They want to practice their ideas and enjoy life. You know, people want to be happy, enjoy life, and make the best of it. So going to Morocco is just a different country, good people, and it's important that we recognize that and visit and go with an open mind. And if you want a couple of wives, yeah, Morocco might be the place to go.
Well, I may just have to satisfy myself with bringing back some pictures. I'm not sure I want to bring back a wife or two.
Right.
Not saying that it's not possible. I'm just not expecting it at this point in time. So, I understand that you are fairly bilingual. How would you say peace, love, and harmony?
I would say peace, love, and harmony.
Come on now, you should. I thought you had this down.
No, I don't have it.
Oh, okay.
Peace, love, and harmony is being in tune with
yourself. No. In Arabic.
Oh, assalamu alaikum.
Close enough.
All right.
With that, thank you, sir, for coming in. And you're welcome to come back anytime. Share more with us.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate that.
All right, then.
Peace.
Peace. Well, folks, that's the show. As you can probably tell, we had a bit of fun putting it together for you. I don't know if it was the promise that I would buy the beer and tacos after the show, but for whatever reason, Brother Malzone has promised to come back and interview me about Thailand. So we may have that up in about 10 days or so. Thanks again for listening. Kokujin Chronicles is recorded, edited, and mastered with free and open source software in Ubuntu Studio. This episode has featured the music of Pasqualino Ubaldini from his Giravaghi Notturni album. This album and thousands of others are available free at jamendo.com. Until next time, peace, love, and harmony.